Hey everyone, it's Jeff. Just cutting in here at the beginning of the episode to let you know that the recording went on a little longer than Aunt Beth and I were planning on, so we decided to split this episode in half. So we're going to get through up to our number sixes in our best movies of the 2010s countdown, and then in part two, we'll do our top fives. So if you're someone who likes your podcast episodes shorter and get daunted by really long episodes, you can rest easy now. But if you're someone who likes to listen for as many hours as possible and likes them when they go on and on forever, well, you've got more coming. And you can just combine these two right after the other if that's what you'd like to do. All right, let's get to it. Listening to another episode of That's Entertainment. I am your pop culture maven, Jeff Malone, and with me, as always, live from Hampton, Maine, is my Aunt Beth Woods. How are you
Hello.
Doing today, Aunt Beth?
I'm doing great.
Good to hear. It is May 21st that we're recording. I believe it'll be May 24th if you're listening the day that this episode is released. And we are actually experiencing May weather, though apparently Maine is hotter than New York right now, so we're still living in the upside down a bit.
I guess so. It happens once in a while.
Well, since the topic of weather is just too disorienting, we'll go ahead and get right into our main areas of discussion, which I think makes us go less insane, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
excuse me. Okay, so on That's Entertainment, we pick a pop culture topic and discuss it according to the three Fs, first, favorite, and forever. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. We are discussing the best movies of the 2010s, the most recently concluded decade. Aunt Beth and I have both selected our top 10 picks, and we are going to reveal them to each other. We have not shared our lists yet, so we're going to be in for some surprises. Mm-hmm. And do you think we'll have any in common?
I don't know. I'm curious. That'll be interesting to see. I hope we have a few in common.
Well, I know you said you had 27, I think, originally, and then you needed to cull them down from there. And I have like a longer list of 25, so we might, if we don't have any overlap in our top 10, I'll bet we at least have some in our longer lists.
Oh, okay. So you had 25 and brought that down to 10 then?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, we probably did.
So that's going to be the bulk of the episode, just us running through our top 10 picks. But before we get to that, we did want to talk about a few entertainers who passed away recently, especially one who Aunt Beth and I, we know that we both love this guy. He was almost the namesake for a title, the name of this podcast, something that we considered.
That's right.
Before we settled on That's Entertainment. And that is the hilarious, adorable Fred Willard, who passed away on May 15th at the age of 86 from natural causes. And wanted to mention this book. Have you ever heard of this, Aunt Beth? Fred Willard's Movie Trivia?
Oh, no, I haven't. Have you had that?
I found it online on Amazon a few years ago. Like, I was looking for a trivia book for my dad, And there's this whole series of books like this. There's a Dick Van Patten's TV trivia. And I got my dad, I think it was Peter Tork's music trivia.
Okay.
For the trivia portion of this episode, I'm going to go ahead and pick a question at random here from this book.
Okay. Because so, I didn't even pick a trivia this time because of just the movies I was picking. So, okay. Let's see.
Go ahead and pick a number between 1 and 260.
Okay.
183. Okay. Actually, it looks like the odd numbers are on... The odd page numbers are the answers, it looks like. I'll pick one from 182. So here's the question on the top of 182. Again, this is from Fred Willard's Magnificent Movie Trivia. I think it's available on Amazon if you'd like a copy. Which of these films was directed by French filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard?
Ooh.
Hiroshima Mon Amour, Breathless, The 400 Blows, or Les Diaboliques?
And it's Jean-Luc Godard?
Godard, yes.
Okay, it's either 400 Blows or what was the third one?
The third one was 400 Blows.
Oh, what was the second one?
Breathless.
I'm going to say Breathless.
That is correct.
Ooh.
Have you seen either of those?
A little bit of a guess, but no, I don't think I did see those. Have you?
I haven't seen Breathless, but I have seen The 400 Blows.
Okay.
But none of those featured Fred Willard.
No.
So I'd like to take a guess for when you first became a fan of his.
You're going to guess. Okay.
I think it was in 1970.
That's a good guess. Perfect guess. And that is correct.
Okay, good.
Well, what year was he actually on Fernwood Tonight? Do you know when that was?
I want to say 73, or let's see. Looks like that started, it aired in 1977.
Okay, that's when I first became aware of him, with Martin Mull. And so I don't think I watched it religiously, but I remember him on that before he was in all the Christopher Guest movies.
Right.
And I would really love to be able to watch some of those again. I wonder if they're available, because I remember thinking how funny he and Martin Mull were together. So I would like to watch that. So were you aware of him before any of the Christopher Guest movies?
I don't remember seeing him in anything before Best in Show.
Okay.
It's hard to remember exactly because he made such an impression on that movie that he felt like someone I had known forever as soon as I saw him. But yeah, I don't think I'd seen him in anything before that. But since then, he's been in some great movie after great movie and great TV show after great TV show this century.
Yeah.
You know, he was in his 60s, 70s, and 80s. I'd say he was one of the most important people in American comedy.
Yeah, if you saw his name, that you knew it was going to be a good movie just because he just made everything so much better and so much funnier. And that's how I'm just really going to miss him, because I just think of him and I laugh I rewatched all the scenes. I don't know if any of our viewers are familiar with his scenes from Best in Show, the comment that the best part of when he is the commentator and during the dog show is a whole that people need to watch that because that's a classic. And then our favorite in the Mighty Wind that you used to, you could say some of those. I rewatched that and I just was laughing out loud because it just cracks me up. I just, it's just so funny. So, And is it all, did they say it's all ad-libbed? Is most of his stuff ad-libbed?
I think almost every one of Christopher Guest's movies are like, I want to say like 80 to 90% improvised. Like the script is just an outline. Like we're going to start at this point and then this will be our ending. But each individual scene, you come up with your lines on the spot of the moment. I think some of them, like especially the Fred Willard's, or like this would be my guess, his introduction scene in A Mighty Wind, I would guess that he had some stuff prepared ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he probably talked with Christopher Guest about who his character would be. Then he went off on his own, brainstormed some ideas, and then came in, and it was Christopher Guest's first time hearing what happened. And I don't think so. Fred probably had come up with that before the camera started rolling, would be my guess.
Your dad said he listened to it too and said, still so funny.
He was a delight in Anchorman.
I've got don't even remember him much in that. I've got to rewatch that too.
He plays the station manager, and like whenever we see him at the start of a scene that he's in, he's on the phone with someone dealing with his troubled son. He'll be saying, my son was on something called acid and was shooting a bow and arrow into a crowd.
I've got to watch that again. Oh, I just love him. It's so funny. You should look about, see if there's any, if you can get Fernwood tonight. It was first called, I guess it was Fernwood, and then it was America Tonight or something. After that. Yeah. So, anyway. Hopefully.
It doesn't look like it's streaming anywhere. I wonder if the DVD set.
Yeah. Maybe it will now that he's passed away.
Yeah. I don't know. Looks like there might be some clips on YouTube at least, or other random video sites. He does at least have one more thing coming up posthumously. He's going to be on the Netflix show Space Force.
Oh, good. I just was reading about that. That looks so funny. Oh, good. And he's going to... Oh, I'm glad. That'll be fun to see.
Yeah. Okay. We have already covered a Fred Willard show, or a show that he appeared on in depth, with our Modern Family episode. We have considered doing the films of Christopher Guest as an episode, so I think that might be up in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
Then I just wanted to mention that for the older viewers, one of my Jeff's dad and I used to watch a show called Leave It to Beaver. And there was a character, Eddie Haskell, who people just loved to hate. And he was played by Ken Osman. And he just passed away this week, too. He was, I think, 76. So it's sad all these people that I grew up with are starting to pass away now. All my TV actors. So anyway. All right. We should probably start our list, because that might take a little while to get
We've got plenty to get to. It is 2020, which means that the 2010s decade has wrapped up. I know sometimes people are like, actually, is year ending in zero? That's the that's the end of the decade, but we're going to go with the standard where it's the year that ends in zero starts the decade, the one that ends in nine ends the decade. So we have considered all the movies that we watched that were released between January 1st, 2010, and December 31st, 2019, and we have selected the ones that we thought were the 10 very best. Now, for the first section, so that'll be the favorite section. For the first section, we're going to quickly talk about what our state of mind vis-a-vis cinema was in January 2010. Do you remember what you were looking forward to back then, or what you thought about what was going on?
I always have a hard time with these, Jeff, because I know you remember better than I. So all I thought, I said I didn't remember feeling anything in particular about the state of cinema, but I did have a number of films from that year on my list that I needed to narrow down. So I must have been excited about movies, you know, that as usual. So, yeah, I mean, nothing in particular. Nothing stood out, nothing bad or good. Pretty much just, you know, I mean, every year when the year starts, there's always something that I'm excited about seeing. I'd always read up on the new movies. So, but, you know, nothing that I could remember in particular. Did you have something like that you can think of that was standing out to you?
Blind. Wrote down a couple of trends that were started around that time and continued on for the decade. Like the rise of 3D was happening.
Oh.
Avatar had just come out in December of 2009. Mm-hmm. And then for a few years there, it seemed like every big movie was coming out in 3D.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
And I think 3D is still a regular part of movies now, but I think nowhere near as much excitement about it as there was 10 years ago. The other thing I think that's really still a big deal was the rise of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man had just come out in 2008, and the Avengers was just a couple years away, and now there's like three Marvel movies every year,
yeah,
and each of them makes $1 billion.
It's crazy. Okay.
Do you have any Marvel movies on your list or any 3D movies?
No, I don't think I do. Do you?
Don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't. Or actually, I might have. There we go. Nope. Actually, I think I do have one 3D movie, it looks like.
Oh. So,
that trend is reflected a little bit in my list. So yeah. That's what we in the biz call a tease.
Wow.
Keep listening if you want to find out which one it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we're both ready to finally reveal our lists.
All right.
So I think we're going to go back and forth. One of us will reveal our number 10, and then the other will reveal his or her number 10, and so on back and forth. Now, to determine who goes first, I decided I would write down a number. I've already written it down, and I'll have you guess what it is. And if you guess correctly, then you can decide if you go first or if you want me to go first. So I've written down either 20 or 10.
Okay, 20. Oh.
What does that say?
Okay, I'll let you go first. And I just want to say in advance, so for some of them, I've definitely wrote more than others. So,
that's,
you know,
fine.
Because I can't remember, some of them I don't remember a lot of even why I did love them. You know, it's like,
right.
You know, like some, as I was going through the list, some just stood out and I was like, oh, I loved that. But I don't always remember a huge amount about them. So just
are, you, Are you saying that you didn't rewatch every single movie?
Yeah, I watched 27 movies. Yes. So you go first for your number 10.
Is that the sequel to 27 Dresses?
Yeah, 27 movies.
Good morning, apartment. Good morning, doorway. Morning wall. Morning ceiling. Good morning, floor. Ready to start the day.
Okay, so Aunt Beth correctly guessed 20 as the number I've written down, and she's chosen me to go first. So my number 10. We didn't have to wait very long for the tease.
Oh.
One 3D movie I have is The Lego Movie.
Ooh.
Based in 2014, directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. It stars Chris Pratt as the voice of Emmett, who is a bit of a cog in the machine. In what is the land where they live? And he, in the Lego universe, he's kind of like a worker drone. You know, Bricksburg is the city. And, but he, there's a hint that, you know, he might be a hero who needs to topple the forces of corporate business. And overall, this is a movie that in its own way is very capitalistic. You know, you can consider it an advertisement for Legos. I'm sure Lego sales went up for it. But that doesn't mean that the story itself doesn't resonate and that the songs and the visuals and the jokes aren't altogether very fun. You know, like the song from it, Everything Is Awesome, is meant to be ironic because it's like you're supposed to conform and agree that everything is awesome, but that's a very catchy song.
And who performed that?
I think in the movie itself, it was performed by the cast members, and then I think the Lonely Island guys, like Andy Samberg and Yorma Taccone and Akiva Schaffer, they, I think they're officially credited as the writers. Oh, okay. But it's them and Tegan and Sarah who performed it.
Okay.
So did you see the Lego Movie?
Yes, and I remember enjoying it, but I don't remember a lot about it at all. Like I said, that's a long time ago, 10 yeah. years ago.
Well, that was 6 years ago.
Oh, that's not a two. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was 2014.
2014, okay. I was thinking it was 2010 because it was your number 10, but right. That's, yes, yeah. Okay.
I didn't select them in an ascending chronological.
I know, although my number 10 actually is from 2010.
All right, well then, let's discover what it is.
Okay.
Such a beautiful place to be with friends.
Mine is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. From 2010. And I really did, it's funny because I really did enjoy all the Harry Potter movies. I read all the books, even though I'm an years old. I don't do that as well as you. The first book I read was to my son, and then I got hooked on them. And all of them came out before 2010, so it was nice that this one was in this decade. And I like this one better than the final one. It just kind of started to tie things all together. What Harry, Ron, and Hermione are trying to defeat the Dark Lord. And I don't know. It's just was very satisfying to me. And I just was glad that I could have a Harry Potter movie on this list. So did you see all the Harry Potter movies?
I did, yes. There were like two or three that I didn't see in the theater, but I've seen all of them. And I was definitely a Harry Potter fan. Not quite as big as other people, but definitely enough to it was never in doubt that I was going to see every single one of them.
Yeah, I was just very I thought they were all really well done. I mean, the books were so fantastic, and I thought they did a really great job with the movies, and that the kids were, that all the actors were great. And so that's my number 10. I'm glad I had that on the list. So, and that was, yeah, like I said, that was from 2010. So.
Yeah, that kind of started a trend of the last books in
fantasy
series being split into two movies.
That's true. Was that the first one that did that, right? Because then
maybe there's older examples that did it way back when, but like in this decade, I think it kicked off the trend.
And Hunger Games, right. And a whole bunch of them did that. Yeah.
But I think with Harry Potter, it actually was more justified to do it in that case. It felt like two different movies.
Yeah. Okay. Number nine.
I'm ready to party with the best of them. And I'm gonna go down to the river.
Okay, my number nine comes from 2011. I think this is my favorite comedy of the decade. It is Bridesmaids.
Oh.
Directed by Paul Feig, written by and starring Kristen Wiig, as well as Maya Rudolph, Melissa McCarthy, Rose Byrne, Ellie Kemper, Wendy McClendon Covey. And this is a very touching and rocky depiction of how difficult it is to maintain and develop friendships as you grow older, as you get into your 30s and beyond. I can't speak from experience beyond that, but I can speak from experience up to 30s and from observation beyond that. But yeah, so Kristen Wiig plays Annie, whose life is like falling apart as her best friend, played by Maya Rudolph, is getting married, and it all comes to a head in some hilarious, gross set pieces. I remember I saw this movie on opening weekend with my sister, future guest of the show, Katie Malone. And we saw it, I believe, the opening Saturday to a packed house, and the crowd was absolutely roaring at the food poisoning scene.
Oh, jeez.
It was one of those moments where you could not hear, like, the next few lines of dialogue. But I was not cracking up as much as everyone else, because I was just too horrified.
Yeah,
sorry. I think that's, one of the best horror scenes.
I know.
Of the last decade. Because I was just like, oh man, I can just imagine, like, what if I were in that situation? I know I would not be laughing.
Yes, that's what I picture, too. Sometimes instead of laughing, I think the same way as you do.
It went beyond secondhand embarrassment to secondhand.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be embarrassed, but I know just, like, when you're so sick that everything's just, you just can't keep anything in.
Yeah.
You know, like, you feel so hot, sweaty, and you feel like, it's just, it feels like you're never going to get better.
And that's, one of Melissa McCarthy's best.
Yeah. I think that's still my favorite performance of hers.
Yeah. Oh my God. She's hilarious in that.
Yeah. And thanks to her character Megan, the movie does end in a much happier place.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of everyone taking a number two in the street, instead it ends with puppies and bow ties. Is that, were any of the scenes in Bridesmaids similar to any marriages, any weddings that you've been a part of?
No, thank God. I know. I watched them. I'm like, oh my God, if that ever really happened, I can't imagine. Luckily, no. And I also loved Chris O'Dowd in that, too.
Yes.
Yeah. He's also, I love him. He's a good guy.
Hold on a second. Are you the billionaire owner of Apple Computers?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, you got no right to wear New Balance sneakers ever. Come on.
Okay. My number nine was also from 2011.
Uh-huh.
And it was Crazy Stupid Love.
Oh, yes.
And it was a rom-com, I guess you would call it, mm-hmm. but it kind of brought back, well, I don't know how to describe it. I felt like it was a really smart, sophisticated rom-com. Sometimes you think of rom-com and it gets a negative aspect to it, but this one was just done so well. First of all, the cast was so fantastic. Steve Carell, Julianne Moore, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone. Who's the other one that I'm thinking of?
Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, Marissa Tomei.
Kevin Bacon.
Who?
Kevin Bacon.
Oh, I forgot that he's even in it. Who does he play?
He's the one who Julianne Moore is having an affair with.
Oh, okay.
Do you know who plays the younger sister?
Is that, what's her name? No, I'm thinking of somebody else. No, who's that?
Someone who's gone on to have a recent Emmy nomination, Joey King.
Oh, she's in that? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I need to see, I need to rewatch these. I don't see a lot of movies more than once, even though I love them.
Yeah.
So I would really like to watch this again. I just remember loving it at the time. And anything Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Yeah. It was just funny and charming and romantic and just really well done. And so, yeah, I mean, these are really movies that I loved. And I'm sure you, to make a top 10 out of all the movies mm-hmm. in 10 years for us has to be a pretty special movie. So that was mine.
Did you know it was written by Dan Fogelman?
I read that. Yes. And that the time I didn't put two and two together, and that's who's writing This Is Us.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, as I read that, I'm like, no wonder I loved it.
He has a propensity for twist endings.
Yeah.
And Crazy Stupid Love has a doozy.
Yeah, see, I don't, now that you're saying that, I don't even remember it. I'm definitely going to go watch it.
I mean, spoiler alert if you don't want to know, but there is a scene where we find out how certain cast members are, how they connect to one another that we don't know at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. All right, now I'm curious, even though I put it on my list. I've got to rewatch it, or I'll Google it.
The scene is on YouTube, so like okay. Search like Crazy Stupid Love twist reveal.
Okay. I will rewatch. I'll look for that.
Not quite my tempo.
Number eight.
My number eight comes from 2014. It's my second choice from 2014. It is Whiplash.
Whiplash.
The story of Miles Teller as a jazz drummer.
I never saw that.
He enrolls at, I believe it's a fictional college called the Schaefer Conservatory, and he meets his match in the form of Terrence Fletcher, as played by J.K. Simmons. He's the jazz instructor at that school, and people struggle to match his tempo, and this to me is a horror movie about committing too hard to your artistic goals.
Wow.
And also,
I wanted to see that, and I never did.
Okay. It's intense. You know, don't eat a full meal while watching it. Because your muscles will be tense.
Yeah, that's hard to watch. And, yeah.
I mean, it's not particularly, like, it's emotional abuse is what's going on, which, yeah, if you're prone to becoming emotionally connected to the movies that you watch, this is a one that you'd have to steel yourself for.
Yeah, I know,
it's one I'd recommend, but, you know, go in knowing that it goes to some dark places.
And he won an award. Didn't he win an Academy Award for that?
J.K. Simmons did, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I kind of like this was, think of it as like the horror of commitment and codependency. Because I think like Fletcher and, let's see, Miles' character, his name is Andrew. I think they're in a codependent relationship. You know, despite as much abuse as Fletcher throws at his student, like he kind of needs someone to do what he's convinced himself he needs to do as a teacher.
Okay.
That has one of my favorite, most thrilling ending sequences of the decade.
Oh, wow.
So that's okay. Whiplash for you.
He was kind. You is smart. You is important.
Okay, and mine is from another one from 2011. Oh. Is The Help.
Uh-huh.
And
another with Emma Stone.
And I'm realizing I think I've got maybe three on my list with her. That's interesting. I didn't think of that at the time, but now I'm going to have to go back and see how many with certain people that I have. So I had read the book first and absolutely loved it. So then when the movie came out, I was really excited. And it's just such an interesting story about a Southern society girl, and she interviews all the Black women who've spent their lives taking care of these prominent white families in 1960s Mississippi. And it's basically these women have kind of raised these children and more than the families, you know, themselves. And the acting was fantastic. I think that's the first time I saw Viola Davis. I mean, I wonder if she'd been in plays, you know, in the theater before, because she's not that, she was maybe in her 40s, but I hadn't seen her much before that. And she and Octavia Spencer, I mean, they were both fabulous. And it's funny. It's so sad in some parts and it's heartfelt. Yeah. And it was just fabulous. I know it. Your mom loves it too. I know. I remember her. And yeah, I guess I do really love Emma Stone. I just realized because I think she's probably one of my favorite younger actresses, although she's not super young, and she's, well, mid-30s probably.
She's right around the age of, she's the same age as me, so.
Oh, okay.
So she's.
You've seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Help. Did you enjoy that?
I did, yeah. Not quite as much for it to be in the running for my top list, but yeah, I think it's something that the acting across in the whole cast elevates it a lot.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's to me, I think its most lasting legacy is the one line, say it with me, I is kind,
oh,
I is special, I is important.
Important. Is that the whole thing?
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, God. But at the end, when she's leaving, does she say that when she's walking away, when she fires her?
Yeah, when Viola Davis says that one last time
right
before she leaves.
Oh, my God.
It's another movie I saw with my sister on the first week it came out.
Oh. That's good. It's good that your whole family likes to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed that one. Okay, we're almost halfway. Number 7.
3 sharp knocks. Ba 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 duk duk duk.
Lucky number 7. Mine is from 2014. Another from 2014. It is the Babadook. You know about the Babadook?
I've heard of it, but I don't even know what it's about or anything.
It is a horror movie about a picture book character who wears a top hat and has pointy fingers.
Ooh.
And it's an Australian movie. And this boy named Sam is making his widowed mother crazy with his uncontrollable antics, and he finds this picture book called the Babadook, and then the Babadook seems to be breaking out from the book world into the real world and just terrorizing them in their house.
Oh, geez.
And ultimately, they're able to subdue him by Amelia is Sam's mom, and she kind of confronts her own fears related to her husband's death. Her husband died in a car accident while driving her to the hospital while she was in labor.
Oh, man.
So it all ultimately works as like a metaphor of dealing with grief.
Mm-hmm.
The Babadook is like her worst personal fears come to life.
Oh, wow.
She's finally able to keep them in check by the end by sending the Babadook to the basement and saying, like, the fears and sadness that you represent are a part of me, but I have you under control now.
Uh-huh. Is it really scary when you're...
It's kind of scary, yeah.
Ooh,
I'd be surprised if you could get through it.
No, I'm not. I won't. I won't even attempt it. Ugh. I can't watch those at all. Mm-hmm. Wow, enough. Do you like scary movies?
Yeah, I've become... We don't cover it a lot because I know you're not a horror fan, but I think it might actually be my favorite movie genre.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just the way I'm wired. It doesn't, scary movies don't really scare me that much. Like I like to say I'm easily startled, but not easily scared.
Yeah.
So like scary movies are cathartic in a way. Cause you know, like they make me jump out of my seat, but they don't have me like constantly anxious, anxiety ridden.
Yeah. Wow. I have a client too who just loves, that's her, probably her favorite too. And she loves Stephen. She met Stephen King at, who was she going to? His last, a movie that came out in the fall, and she was there at the opening night, and he was there.
Was it Dr. Sleep?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, she got Shining the sequel.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Man, I can't watch those. Well, especially by myself. But even when I used to watch them with somebody, it was like I'd be afraid to get up in the night to go to the bathroom or whatever. So. Mm-hmm. I like a good suspense.
Yeah.
You know, but not a really scary or anyway.
Every time I think about that black baboon putting his filthy black hands on her purest white driven snow body. I mean pure, Walter. She's a saint. She's an angel. It makes me want to puke.
You are just the kind of guy that we are looking for.
Okay. My number 7 is from 2018, so a little bit more recently, and it's Black Klansman.
Okay.
I said I enjoyed this very important film about the first African-American detective to serve in the Colorado Springs Police Department. And he's played by John David Washington, and he teams up with another colleague played by Adam Driver to take down the Ku Klux Klan. I remember watching the guy, I forget what John David Washington's name was in the...
Do you remember the Ron Stallworth.
Yeah. I remember watching him thinking, oh my God, this guy is fantastic. And he's going to be a really good really going to go places before I realized that he was Denzel's son. Uh-huh. I was like, it just, this movie just was so powerful. And I came out of there and I was like, boy, everybody should see this movie. I wish it, I don't remember at the time if it had gotten enough publicity. I mean, it was nominated for an Academy Award, and but it was such an important film. And I sometimes those kind of movies come out and I think, you know, they should just, it should be something like required viewing, you know, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It was just so good. And there was some lightness to it. And he and Adam Driver's relationship was kind of fun. And I liked his, was it his girlfriend? Were they married, or was that just the girlfriend that when he was younger, there was a girl that he was dating and
Ron.
Yeah.
I don't know his real life biography that well.
Okay. I remember them showing him with a girl, like, oh, maybe that was early on his college days, and there was, but I enjoyed that. I just came out of there and I was like, ooh, that was heavy, heavy, but so good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay. So we're ready for our number sixes number six. Then.
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. I'm talking about the real deal. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
I think we are going to stay in 2018.
Oh, okay.
My number six is Sorry to Bother You.
Oh, I did like that.
Which is about a fellow named Cash Green, played by Lakeith Stanfield, except when he's working as a telemarketer, his voice is provided by, his white voice is provided by David Cross. And it turns out that when he adopts a white voice, that makes him a much more successful telemarketer. But there's also stuff about unionizing. Like, this is perhaps the best politically minded movie of the decade. Perhaps unexpectedly so for some viewers. And then halfway through, there's a wild twist that breaks free that I do not want to spoil in case you haven't seen it. But if you have seen it and you, or you want to talk more about it to just freak out about it, feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah.
I'm happy to reminisce about it whenever.
I know. Wesley and I saw it on my birthday that year, and we were like watching it, and I remember coming out of there like, that was crazy. But we both really liked it too, though.
Yeah, I told someone it's, I don't know if everyone will like this movie, but it's something that I recommend to anyone who cares about movies.
Yeah.
It's like, you need to see this to have an opinion about it.
Yeah, just to, those are good ones to see.
What? 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 Shh, stop.
No!
Shh, you have to be quiet.
If you want me to, then you have to make sense. If you want me to be quiet, you have to make some goddamn sense. You tell me why you're not going.
So my number six, so you'll be interested. So this is 2016, and it's got some other people in it that I've been in a few of my other lists. It's La La Land.
Oh, boy.
So again, we've got Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
And again, yes. And J.K. Simmons, who I mentioned.
Oh, he's in that.
See, yeah, he plays, I think, like the owner of the restaurant or the club that Ryan Gosling performs at.
Oh, okay. So this was a modern day musical, and it was two actors that I love and a score that I loved and a beautiful love story. So I said, how could I not love it? Mm-hmm. I mean, I love musicals, and we may be doing a show about musicals or a podcast about musicals coming up, but it was nice to, you know, you don't have them You don't see them much anymore. So it was really fun when this came out. And I thought they did a great job of doing a modern day musical. Sometimes, you know, when you write a modern score, the songs are just kind of, I don't know, just so-so. But the score was great, and the songs were catchy. And it was funny, they kept talking about Ryan Gosling bringing jazz back. And there was some really good music, too, with John Legend and I forget who else provided some music with him in the clubs. And I just thought it was just a really, that's another one I want to rewatch again. So I just loved the story. And I thought they both did a really great job with that. So it's a little sad. And I guess a love story often doesn't end up the way you want it to.
Yeah. Bittersweet final. Yeah. Montage, which I think makes the movie really.
Yeah,
I think the ending really sells it.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun. I loved it.
Hey everyone, it's Jeff here, cutting in again with a message recorded after the recording of the main audio of this episode. Well, we've reached the midway point, so that wraps up part one, and the rest of the countdown will arrive tomorrow, May 25th, so hope you're ready for that when it arrives.